Every Woman is a womanish show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Mid-Coast Radio Project, Incorporated.
Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart at the KKFI studio with Amy Bell and Beth Pike, and who will be reading the Women's E-News for us shortly, which we just recorded by the skin of our teeth. And also, after the Women's E-News, we will be talking with Gail James and Becky Fast about a coalition of organizations in the Johnson County area that are sponsoring a rally to get out the vote next Saturday. So let's begin now with Beth and Women's E-News.
In cheers, Pakistani teenager Malala Yousafzai won the 2014 Nobel Peace Prize. Malala, who was shot in the head by the Taliban in 2012 for advocating girls' rights to education, becomes, at age 17, the youngest Nobel Peace Prize winner by far. She shares the prize with India's children's rights activist Kalesh Satyarthi. More news to cheer this week. The New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene has introduced policy recommendations that will no longer require a surgical requirement for transgender New York City residents to align their gender marker on their birth certificate with their gender identity. The city will instead only require certification from a health provider, including doctors, nurses, social workers, and therapists, that a person seeking a change is living a different gender than the one listed on their birth certificate, instead of needing proof of surgery or hormone replacement therapy. Health Commissioner Dr. Mary Bassett said that the proposed policy will make the process of changing one's gender on a birth certificate easy and accessible now that transgender people no longer have to change their bodies to change their gender identity. 40% of transgender people have faced harassment when presenting identity documents that did not match their gender identity. The health department is going to hold a public hearing on the proposal in November, and the city's Board of Health will vote on the proposal December 9th. Approval is expected. Comedian Sarah Silverman and creative agency Draga 5, co-creators of The Great Schlep, launched on October 8th a $30 trillion campaign to close the wage gap between men and women, according to the National Women's Law Center press release, has named it the Equal Payback Project. And the campaign was launched with a four-minute video in which Silverman glosses over gender pay gap basis and then tries to get a doctor to turn her into a man so that she won't lose any more money. Then she asks for donations so that she can turn around and give them to every woman in the United States. The funds raised will benefit the National Women's Law Center, a nonprofit organization educating the public about the wage gap. And news to jeer, some 90% of women in restaurant jobs that depend on tips report being bothered at work by some form of sexual harassment. It is particularly a problem, the report says, for female restaurant workers in states where tip jobs have lower federal minimum wage than $2.13. Women who have to live off tips are subjected to the worst kind of sexual harassment. The Glass Floor, which is a 34-page report on sexual harassment in the restaurant industry, is being produced, and that will require that all full minimum wage paid to be tipped restaurant worker employees. And also, two cases of sexual harassment in the United States turned very violent. In Detroit, Mary Unique Spears, a 27-year-old engaged mother of three, was shot and killed after leaving a funeral on the city's east side. Spears was approached by a 38-year-old suspect who asked her for her phone number. When she refused, a fight broke out and the man opened fire, killing Spears and wounding five of her family members. This was reported by the Daily News on October 7th. And also in Queens, New York, a 26-year-old unidentified woman is now in critical condition after a man slashed her throat when she turned him down for a date. As more and more folks flood into cities, street harassment and its escalation into more extreme forms of violence is now becoming a growing global epidemic, said Emily May, who's the co-founder and executive director of Hollaback. Contrary to popular belief, it's not perpetuated by construction workers, though even that creepy guy in the corner. It's perpetuated by sexism. And Satya Nadella, Microsoft's chief executive officer, said women don't need to ask for a raise and should instead put their trust in the system. Nadella spoke on October 9th at an event for women in computing, which was held in Phoenix. He also added that good karma would help the boss realize that employees could be trusted and should have more responsibility. He later backpedaled on Twitter, saying that women should actually ask for a raise. Hundreds of pregnant women and girls are dying needlessly in South Africa because they fear their HIV status might be revealed during prenatal care. The human rights watchdog Amnesty International found that 1,560 maternal deaths were recorded in 2011 in South Africa and 1,426 in 2012. Experts are suggesting that 60% of all the deaths were actually avoidable. Women and girls are among hundreds of demonstrators targeted in Hong Kong, as Amnesty International said in a press statement on October 3rd. The incidents of sexual assault, harassment, and intimidation were reported. The police's inaction tonight was shameful, and the authorities have failed in their duty to protect peaceful protesters who came under attack. And this was said by Maybelle Ah, the director of Amnesty International in Hong Kong. A young man was stabbed to death on October 5th while attempting to rescue a woman from sexual harassment in Egypt. And the activist group I Saw Harassment, the Egyptian Streets publication, had reported this, as holiday seasons in Egypt seem to be normally associated with peak sexual harassment. I Saw Harassment said the second day of Eid saw them witnessing and intervening with 25 cases of harassment in Cairo, while the first day saw 21 incidents in downtown Cairo.
Yeah, it looks like the war on women is escalating, the undeclared war on women, I should say. Maybe we can actually declare there is a real war on women from that violence that we're hearing now, that strange men feel compelled to slash the throats and shoot women who won't give them their phone number. There's something sadly, sadly wrong with that. Thank you, Beth, for reading that news for us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And now then, we'll move on to Get Out the Vote rally with Gail James and Becky Fast, who are members of a coalition of organizations who've organized this opportunity for people to hear from candidates for taking back Kansas. Gail.
Thank you for having us on, Sharon and Amy. We appreciate very much your opening the show. We all listen to Every Woman, and topics are always relevant and impactful. And we hope that this rally will be also. We really want to develop a sense that coming together about taking back Kansas, taking a look at what the issues of Kansas are, and getting the vote out, especially among women and girls of 18 and older. We really hope that will encourage all of us to vote. We also expect that the wider community will show up on October 25th and I will have Becky Fast tell you more about it.
Well, on October 25th, it will be at the Matt Ross Community Center in Overland Park. And I first of all want to thank Sharon and Amy, too. This is one of my favorite shows. Every Saturday I look forward to listening in to this show and to Women's Song. So this is a real treat for me to be on this show. The rally, the coalitions came together because of our concern about many people don't know about early voting. Early voting starts on Monday and in Kansas. I'm talking about not Missouri. You can advance vote in person at four locations, and you can also request an application to vote and have the mail ballot delivered to your home. Right now in Kansas, the governor's race, the Senate race, and many of the other races like Secretary of State, Congress are in a statistical tie, and so turnout is this key, and we all know that in midterm elections, voter turnout drops, and it specifically drops often among women. Women often are balancing caring for their parents, caring for their children, having two jobs, living in fragile economic households. And it's very difficult often for women to get out to vote on election day. For example, in 2012, there were 1 million women who were registered, and only half of these women voted. And they're predicting now in 2014, this year, that 635,000, so even more women, might not show up because of the difficulty of balancing so many things in their life. And that's why these organizations came together, because we wanted to educate women about early voting, about voting prior to the election, about voting at home, and we know how important this election is to many women, as their child care subsidies have been cut, school lunches have been impacted, and in our schools in Kansas now, many families are paying over $400 a month for all-day kindergarten, and it's just a critical election for public education. So our rally is focusing on public education and health care as two issues we're keying in that are so important to women and families.
And let me tell you for a moment the organizations that are involved in this rally. We have Mainstream Coalition, True Blue Women, Planned Parenthood of Kansas, Missouri, AAUW, which is the American Association of University Women, the League of Women Voters, also KU Women Students, who are looking at the issues of economic justice and sexual assault, as well as the Latino women of El Centro and their voter outreach program. So we really are a wonderful collaborative across the metro, looking at what the issues are in Kansas, and especially in health and education, because those are the issues that are most impactful to women. Because when you talk about tax policy, it affects the educational funding as well as health care and health services and family services across the state.
And I might also add that Johnson Wyandotte Counties now is part of that sponsoring coalition.
That's right.
And we're very happy to be part of that, because we've been in the women's fray, fighting for women's rights since, I believe, the founding in 1966 of the National Organization for Women. League of Women Voters was there in 1921, I think. Amazingly, I think Alice Paul had a big focus in starting the League of Women Voters. So it's taking all of these organizations, and still we seem to be gaining very little ground. In fact, we may see we're falling back. I hate to say that, but with fewer women voting, when women are key in social issues, they understand so much how important these things are. Kansas, under the current leadership, has cut the income tax. And I was thinking this morning that I had to share this story. My CPA called me and said, when he completed my taxes about 3 days ago, that I was in that class of people that got a tax break being self-employed. I am getting $1,100 back from the state of Kansas. Now, I'd like to say to you, I've not paid a penny in income tax to the state of Kansas, but I'm getting a check for $1,100 back, and I don't think that's right. you know, I'm not going to leave it in Kansas. However, I'm not that altruistic. I'm going to take that money and perhaps find some place to donate it, some worthy cause to donate it to. But it's a travesty that someone who's self-employed or in a small business owner can find themselves getting money back when they haven't paid anything. It's just not fair.
But Sharon, how many people are you going to hire with that money?
Well, I guess $1,100 wouldn't go very far to hiring a staff person, would it?
Well, and do you need a staff person?
Not really.
Well, and what's so ironic, Sharon, is that Kansas right now trails all our neighboring states in job growth. So individuals like yourself received money back, but yet we're trailing Missouri, Nebraska, and we're one of the lowest states now in the nation on job growth. So where is this money going? It was supposed to be an economic engine. Our current governor says we need to be patient, but in the beginning he told us it was going to happen right away.
So you know that this model, this experiment, is not working. We see the evidence and it's not working. But what is working is that per student we are paying $500 less per student across the board in Kansas schools. And this is what is so impactful upon the future of our state, because if you look at what students are receiving from their teachers, from their curriculum materials, it's increasingly less and less and less. And this is absolutely clear that it's not the educational policy as it affects the tax policy is not working in this state.
I am currently a social worker. I have my licensed clinical social work degree, so I work with a lot of families who are really struggling. And one thing that it's been, as Gail said, very impactful to me is the increased poverty rate in Kansas. And women and children are hit the hardest. Under our current administration, childhood poverty has gone up. Kansas Action for Children has documented it 23%. I mean, that's a huge percentage for our childhood poverty rate to go up. And when the governor ran 4 years ago, one of his key reasons for running was, and he outlined in his 2010 campaign, was his goal of reducing the percentage of Kansas kids in poverty. And so the change in policy impacts families directly in terms of, like you said, income tax assistance for low-income families, sales tax assistance has been cut. Subsidies for child care so women can work, you know, the reverse of it, then you have to stay home because you don't have child care to help you go to work.
That's exactly right. And you look at 31% of Kansas City metro area single mothers are not making enough money to provide for their children. And this is information provided by the Women's Bureau of Greater Kansas City and the Women's Foundation of Greater Kansas City and the Women's Bureau from the Department of Labor, Region 7. So if you look at 31%, what that means in terms of household services and household support that is not being provided for the mothers, the single mothers of our area. And then if you look at the impact on children and what they have in going to school and how schools are getting increasingly less support, this is really very serious.
I'm just sitting here trying to take all this in and just thinking of what has happened. You know, I know, I'm a child of the 50s and 60s, and I go back to those days. And when I started working, gosh, I made a decent living. Well, in 1967, I was living pretty good on $100 a week. Can anybody absolutely imagine that? In fact, in my early marriage, my husband and I had a house furnished and things like heat. I guess our utilities and our house was furnished. We lived on $200 a month. That means we were able to make a car payment, buy groceries, and it was $200 a month. Something, I know maybe we don't want to go back to those days, but remember, I'm sorry, reminiscing here, when you only had to choose between three brands of toothpaste instead of hundreds. I spend more time shopping for toothpaste. I still lament the fact that I can't just choose from three brands and be out of the store. But, you know, the cost of living, when I could live on $200 a month or $100 a week, and that my child care was $15 a week, $100 a week, and my child care was $15. Well, there's no way that women's wages have kept up with the increase in child care today. I don't know. What could you say is an average wage for a woman? And the child care is more than $200 a week, isn't it, for child care?
One of my colleagues that I work with talks about half of her salary goes to child care.
And if you add to that the dire statistic that only 80% of a woman's salary is equal to that of men, so that every dollar, that 80 cents or there's not an equivalency. So this is the economic injustice. When you hear us speak of economic injustice, this is really the very clear datum that this refers to, is that a woman's dollar is not the same as the man's dollar, and that therefore who is making the tax policy and the financial decisions that affect our policy. And so we really need to say, let's turn out to vote. I know people, some of my favorite candidates last time around lost by 12 votes. One lost by 12 votes. The other lost by 100 votes. Very few votes will make a difference. That's why every vote makes a difference in this upcoming election. We so much hope that people will realize what is at stake. The other issue to make note of is that the single group that has no voice is the group of children. Children have no voice, so we have to be a voice for children. We have to say we will vote on their behalf, what's best for them in terms of our social fabric, social services, educational policy, and health issues.
I think we actually have a caller on
Good.
The line.
Okay.
Caller, can you say your name and where you're calling from? Uh-oh, I think we lost our caller. Well, if you're still listening, go ahead and call back because we'd love to hear from you.
Our guests today are Gail James and Becky Fast with a coalition of women's organizations.
Well, it did sound like women's organizations. I just called them organizations earlier, who are trying to work to help women understand how important our vote is, and that our vote impacts us the most. Who we elect is going to be most impactful in our lives and our families' lives.
And so you see, the reason why restrictions on voting has been so powerful, because as you said, Sharon, earlier, as you observed, what has happened? Why are there fewer people turning out in elections? They feel their voice doesn't matter. But actually, I think our voices do matter. Officials note this. They realize this. And so they are trying to keep the vote down. And as it affects women and minorities and students, because those are the essential groups that really can determine the outcome of an election. So we have voter ID regulations and new policies. We have also times of voting, advanced voting cut back so that it doesn't help people with very busy schedules. So now that's why, as Becky said earlier, we're very proud to remind people today that early voting in Kansas begins this Monday, October 20th. So as she noted, you can vote in four places.
We do have our caller Good. Back with us. Caller, can you state your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, my name's John. I'm living in the Brookside area.
What's your calling today about?
Oh, I had read something that's along the lines of what you were discussing earlier about, you know, incomes falling or stagnating or whatever. It was a piece by Paul Krugman, and he pointed out that in 1973, a male high school graduate could expect an entry-level wage of $16 an hour in real dollars. And today it's like $11.68. So that would be a 27% decline in starting pay after 38 years.
Well, and I read, too, that to get those entry-level jobs, A four-year college degree is now the equivalent of a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And to get said four-year degree, you are in average $27,000 in debt.
Yeah, that's a good point. So obviously fewer and fewer people are going to be going to university. And high school graduates are like 71% of the workforce. So, I mean, they're really getting wiped out. Hmm. Yeah, it's hard to see how they're going to keep starting families and all that if their wages. I think you'd have to go back to about the time I graduated from high school to get an entry-level wage of what it is now.
What
year? 1961 or thereabouts.
I was 1960.
Mm-hmm.
So, same sort of era when things were a whole lot different, and we were getting along pretty well. Remember those days?
Yeah, well, everybody was in the same boat, I guess.
Well, maybe was it. But...
Well, in the 70s, people think they'd be getting a good deal if they got $16 an hour now when they got out of high school. But actually, that's not even factoring in productivity increases. If you adjusted for not only inflation, which is what Krugman did, but if you also adjust for productivity, in other words, the wealth that a kid would make per hour for his employer, he should be getting about $32 an hour as an entry-level high school graduate.
I worked for 3 years out of college at a bookstore that's no longer in business, that's rather
mm-hmm.
large.
Yeah, that's about all of them, I guess.
They're all out of business
anyway.
For a rainy day.
And I worked there for 3 years and never got a raise.
Yeah.
And the staff got cut back, and the staff got cut back, and
mm-hmm.
the staff got cut back.
Yeah.
And our hours would get cut back, but the amount of stuff that we needed to do was getting increased.
Right. Yeah.
And it was...
Yeah. I worked for an employer once.
And just no growth whatsoever. And, you know, I've got a college degree, and I would love $16 an hour.
Yeah, but that was what I got when I got out of high school first job.
Then maybe I'd be able to afford the child care that I would need to take said job.
Yeah. Well, you know, I worked for an employer for 14 years that asked for a raise once, and they said it was the company policy. They just don't give raises.
Is that company still in business?
I beg your pardon?
Is that company still in business?
Yeah, they're still in business.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, at the point I asked for a raise, I was probably making 35% less than when I'd started after 14 years.
Are you adjusting that for inflation, you mean? Or
in real dollars.
In real dollars,
which is really all that counts.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just one of the reasons that all this is going on is, you know, there are, 30 million companies in the country. I'll make this quick. And out of 30 million companies in the United States, 200 of them rake in 33% of all the business income. 200 out of 30 million mm-hmm. get a third. So all these other companies, I mean, they're just, you know, struggling away.
Yeah.
And the local businesses, like the one I just told you about, they're absolutely dependent on the people living in the community having a decent standard of living for them to survive.
Yeah.
Now, these 200 corporations that get 33% of all the business income in the country, they don't depend on local, you know, citizens for their money.
Right.
They're global players.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that call. I think
you
that
bet.
Was absolutely along the lines of what we were talking about here. And we're actually going to have to take a brief station break, and we will be right back with Gail James and Becky Fast.
Hello, this is Richard Mabian, asking you to tune in to this week's Echo Radio show. James Turner, president of the Missouri Sierra Club, will be stopping by with a very important announcement, followed up by an update from Leticia DeCaney on the diesel emission concerns in the Kansas City, Kansas, and the Gardner-Edgerton neighborhoods. Then we will end the show with a conversation with Mary Akerson about a program called Turnaround Tuesday. So tune in on Monday at 6 p.m.
Veterans Voices, a Kansas City-based nonprofit organization offering writing services to American veterans, is seeking the community's help to support their move and cost for publishing their magazine. For more information, visit veteransvoices.org or email sbcglobal.net. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Hi, this is Helen Gabra-Amlak. I will be hosting Global Roots 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio on October 19th from 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock Central Time. I will be sharing Ethiopian music, and I will have guest speaker James Everett, the author of The Making and the Breaking of an American Spy, who will be sharing his latest project on Ethiopia.
This is Sharon Lockhart on Every Woman, 90.1 FM, KKFI. And we're talking with Becky Fast and Gail James about an upcoming rally that we haven't mentioned where and when. And I think we've certainly talked about why. Mm-hmm. But where and when is this rally?
Well, we hope that you can. Everyone is invited, whether you live in Missouri or in Kansas. It's a Take Kansas Back, Get Out the Vote rally for public education and health care. It is next Saturday at 10 a.m. at the Matt Ross Community Center, which is downtown Overland Park. If you've ever been to the wonderful Farmers Market, it's right close to the Overland Park Farmers Market. It is at 10 a.m. to 11:30, and we'll have candidates speaking. And after the rally, we're going to have an action. We're encouraging people to go door-to-door, to make phone calls, to inform Kansans about early voting, about the advanced vote process, that you can vote in person starting October 20th, and you can request a ballot to come to your home. And also to go door-to-door to let people know how important this election is. I think it's one of the most important elections that I've seen in Kansas in years because of the schools are in jeopardy, health care coverage, Medicaid expansion, jobs in Kansas. These are all critical issues to women and families, and we need to get out the vote and let people know about the importance of voting this election cycle and getting their voices heard on these key issues.
And that, I think, is one of the most important things to reflect on. What can you do more than vote? If you want to say, I know I always vote, but I would like to do something more this time because I realize how important it is, but I don't really know what to do or how to do. And so that's why after this rally at 11:30, we're going to have a room set aside, and people will be there to help you say, this, I think I'd like to do some phone calling. Here's, and they will provide you with a script, with some what to say, with a list. They will provide you with material if you feel like going door to door, if you feel like being part of meeting the public and saying, whom are you voting for? How do you think things are going? Here's some material about some candidates. If you think that's for you, they will also train you a little bit on what to say and how to do canvassing. It's not as hard as it sounds. It's almost, it's very fun. It requires you to be strong and have good shoes, good walking shoes. But aside from that, it's a good experience in knowing what people are really thinking out there in our, among our neighbors.
And you do it with a partner. You won't be sent off on your own.
You're not on your own. Absolutely. Good. Thank you, Sharon, for reminding me. That's very true. And then if you really feel, I just want to write a letter, I might want a short paragraph about what I think, whom I'd like to vote for, and send that to some of our local messaging blogs or letters to the editor. We can train you on that and show you some examples of what to say. You know, those are the kinds of things we provide for the community. All our organizations provide some information and guidelines about how to do more in this election cycle, because that is part of our job we see as citizens and as public servants, as we try to do a little bit more each election cycle to see if we can make that difference.
You know, one thing that I'm wondering if we kind of struggle with when dealing with getting people out to vote on one of these non-presidential election years is that before I got really involved in community affairs and the goings-on within the state, I had no idea how much of my daily life was really affected by the policies being made by people whose names I had never even heard. And
yes.
And I think that it's really challenging because a lot of people don't know who their state representative is. They don't know who their state senator is. They don't know, probably a good more number of people know the Secretary of State, and hopefully more than that would know the governor. But you're still dealing with lesser known down ballot races is what they call them. And those down ballot races have been so vitally important. Mm-hmm. They are the reason why we are not funding our schools. They are the reason why we are not having health care expanded. And they kind of slip under the radar. I mean, all these big national struggles.
And all this is largely due to the fact that politicians are bought and paid for by those 200 large corporations you were referring to early. No, it was John that was referring to those 200 large corporations earlier who owe their allegiance, who these politicians owe their elections to. And it's all about giving a tax break to the wealthy while the poor get poorer and poorer and poorer and poorer.
So have you been struggling to get people to realize the importance of their down ballot candidates?
Yes, it is a struggle because in this last election in 2012 and in 2014, we know that our local elections have 18, or our most recent one was 18% of the electorate, of those eligible to vote. Not all people in the area, but of all those eligible to vote, only 18% voted. And so candidates won based on a very small group of people who turn out to vote for their own particular reasons and their own particular issues. So if we thought if 50% of the population eligible to vote would turn out, the elections would be somewhat fairer and more balanced and certainly would have an impact that would show a concern of the public about the outcomes of an election. So we're hoping to see, we're very curious to see, since all our organizations have been working for getting people registered to vote, making sure they have the documentation they need, and then having turnout. That's what get out the vote means. All the people that we know, if you need a ride to the voting place, then we can help you do that. If you want to vote in advance, we can help you do that. That will make a difference in the turnout. We want to see higher statistics than 15 and 18 and 20%. We want to see 50% and 60 and 80%. Because as you know, it's a trite to say and perhaps a cliche, but people around the world will die for the right to vote. We used to think that was one of our priorities, and yet people are voting less and less frequently.
I think what Amy made a good point. A lot of people, they go out to vote and they'll know the top of the ticket and then they'll start going down the ticket, and we call it voter fatigue because they don't know those down ballot races. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want to just vote for anyone when they don't know who they are. And that's what's difficult for state representative races, to get out the message because they're not on TV. The Kansas City Star is expensive to advertise in. But I will say this week, the Kansas City Star in the 913 section had a great insert, or you can go online and pull it up, talking about each of the candidates in the down ballot races that are running for state representative. So I highly encourage people to go to the 913 section in Johnson County to learn a little bit about their down ballot races for state representative. And especially in Johnson County, it's hard because people often don't know what district they are in. And if they go to JOCO election website, you can put in your address and you can pull up who is, what district you're in, who's your current incumbent. I know when I lived in Lawrence, everyone knew their state representative because that person represented in most of the city. But in Johnson County, the boundaries are so blurred, they intersect. One person may go from northern Johnson County almost to southern Johnson County. So the lines are much more blurred. But that Johnson County election website is just great, putting your address in and seeing who represents you now. Mm-hmm. And that can give you an idea of who will be on your ballot. And as we get closer, you can even pull up and see your ballot. So you will know what will be on your ballot before you go in to vote if you do the in-person early voting or an election day.
A few weeks ago, we had Frank Smith from South Central Kansas on, and we had quite a discussion about voting and voter registration and when it was cut off. And, it was cut off on October 14 in Kansas, and that's 21 days before the election. And we found out that it depends when they cut off voter registration in your state. There's nothing that's sound, reasonable, or consistent about what state you live in. But regardless of that, thinking about some reasons that people don't vote now compared to back in the 60s, I think there was probably greater voter turnout. But, you know, we didn't have so many distractions in the 60s as we have now. When I think, and I got to say this about Facebook, I get on Facebook several times a week. I drill down about three things and I shut it down. It's just, I just don't have time for it. But so many people I can see spend so much time in Facebook. It's like, how do they ever get anything done? It's no wonder that people aren't voting. And then there's, I don't know, Amy, help me out here. What other distractions are there that might be more fun than paying attention to elections?
Baseball?
Ooh, baseball. Oh, a good one, Amy. I mean, I am really curious on how the Royals will impact, you know, some of the get-out-the-vote activities, because typically last week, this week, these are key evenings for people to go door-to-door, make phone calls, and nobody wants to volunteer right now during Royals games. I don't, you know, and who wants to receive a call during, you know, from someone to get out the vote during a Royals game? And so, I'm very excited about the Royals, but it's interesting the intersection between the games and the elections.
Well, it is. It's right here in the crucial time of election season. It's a very crucial hour. And baseball, I mean, it's not even like football where the one game and done. We're looking down this extensive game-watching mentality where people might be even going to rallies on days when there aren't games. I mean, it's just, it is. And sports is always a distraction. I mean, even when the Royals aren't doing well, you know, maybe their favorite college football team is playing on that Saturday and they don't want to get out and go to these rallies, or, you know, their favorite NFL team is playing on Sunday or Thursday or Monday, or if they can quickly.
Voting is a participation sport. Voting is a participation sport, and watching a ball game is just watching. It's not participating.
I will agree with you. I went to the state fair debate between Governor Brownback and Paul Davis, and there was like 2,000 people there. I've never seen it, so many people, and people were cheering, screaming. I felt like I was in a football game, you know. Yeah, I got that zinger, you know. It was definitely like a sporting activity.
Well, too, you know, maybe they don't know their politicians and whatnot, but when I talk to people all the time who don't vote and are proud of not voting. They feel like they're staying out of this fray, that it's an argument. It's just so ugly, and it's us versus them and them versus us, and they're all lying to you, and it's all lies, and it's politics, it's dirty money, and all of this, and so I just stay out of it. But then you talk to them about something like, you know, I went and watched a court case the other day, and a woman was being kept from seeing her child for no other reason than the court refused to enforce a custody law, the custody agreement. The judge just didn't. There was no reason. She wasn't a bad mother. They just didn't feel like working that day. And these are directly things that happen because of laws that we have in our state that are directly voted on by these people that you don't know who they are, that you don't feel like it's important enough to go vote, and that somehow you're staying out of the fray. But when you hear about a mother not getting to see her child, they all go, that's horrible. Well, go vote about it. Seriously, go vote about it.
Last year, and I expect it'll come back this year, there were some particularly punitive laws being kicked about in the House regarding divorce, since you bring that up, about how as soon as you filed for divorce, you could change the beneficiary on your 401k. And, of course, who does that impact? But largely women. I've had two cases where one husband committed suicide before the divorce was final, and one husband had just died suddenly before a divorce. Had he been able to change his 401k, the wife would have been bereft and in poverty and nothing she could do about it. So that, there's totally bad laws, because you know what? It's largely men who are making these laws, and they're not making laws in the interests of women much of the time. Last year or 2 years ago in Johnson County, they impacted very negatively child support in favor of men, or in disfavor of women, I should say. And it goes on all the time. And there's outrage, and everyone's horrified, but it just slips right through there, and nobody says anything, and then life goes on, and women have to learn to make do on less. And I'm tired of it. I mean, it doesn't impact me, but it impacts people I know. Mm-hmm. I don't have to worry about that, luckily.
So why do you think that is? You know, many of us are spending time in the public sector in service on these issues, those of us in education, in the front lines of healthcare, you're in the media here, and every woman as a vehicle for promoting these ideas. Why do you think women don't see themselves as having an impactful voice? Because that's one of the issues that motivates me, why I feel I do what I do, to get a groups of people together to have some action and activity on these issues.
We talk about that. If you will notice, we call ourselves Every Woman, and largely I would say probably 99% of our callers are men, and I'm very proud and happy that men are listening to this show. It heartens me to know that there are good men out there who respect women and believe women should have equality. But why are women not letting their voices be heard? We beg women to call. Some people say because they're too busy taking care of their children. They're doing the laundry. They're out grocery shopping. They're not driving their cars and listening to the radio. If you're driving your car, please pull over before you make the phone call. But do call us at 816-931-5534 and let us know why you think women don't call us as often as men do. I would really like to hear an answer to that.
And especially women of color, women with disabilities, students, women students, elder women, senior women who have had quite a lifetime of experience. What are they thinking? We would love to hear from them. That would be really important to us.
I think you just listed every woman that list. But, you know, it's my understanding that the silencing of women's voices happens at around middle school age, where the girls who were raising their hand in class and knowing all the answers and doing all the schoolwork all of a sudden feel like they're not supposed to be the one with all the answers. They're not supposed to be smart and get made fun of, maybe, if they raise their hands too much, if they speak out too much. And right around puberty, they find that girls lose their voice in the classroom. And I have to think that that's being reflected in the lack of women's voices being heard out in the adult world, and this very crucial aspect of the adult world.
Well, I think that's the groundbreaking study of Carol Gilligan on In a Different Voice, you know, in 1972, when she her research pointed to that and told us of how to notice this phenomenon that occurs in girls' upbringing. And now we still have our current literature telling women they need to lean in more, be more active in your career choices, be more focused in your marriage choices, be more interested in your political choices. You know, we want women to be more involved and engaged in life and not just be recipient and a reactor to life. And so I think that is part of that whole syndrome that affects women very much more than boys.
Or a reflection of your husband's views.
Exactly.
So many women vote the way their husband votes instead of choosing for themselves how they might vote.
We do have another caller. Caller, can you state your name and where you're calling from? Caller, are you there? I think we lost them.
Okay.
Well, let's mention the rally one more time.
Okay, and perhaps there's a time for them to call back if they're still listening.
Well, Gail James and I urge you to come on next Saturday, this coming Saturday, October 25th at 10 a.m. at the Matt Ross Community Center in downtown Overland Park. The rally will start at 10 a.m. and last until 11:30, and at that point, we'll be encouraging those of you who attend to go door-to-door, to phone call, or to sign up to help others, to educate others about voting in the next week. As we're in the final 11 days on October 25th, that will mark the final push to Election Day, and we want to get as many voices heard from women, women of color, during the final days of the election.
And remember those two dates. November 4th, of course, is Election Day in this 2014 election period. Before that, a week from today, October 25th, will be our Get Out the Vote rally with numerous organizations represented. Many candidates will be there to speak to you and to remind you how you can advance vote and how you can help your neighbors to vote.
And that's at 8101 Marty in downtown Overland Park.
Thank you.
And you can't miss it.
And I do believe we've got a caller on the line with us. Caller, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, this is Clark. I'm calling from Riverside.
Hi, Clark.
Hi. One of the ladies mentioned earlier that she got a refund. Her CPA finally got her tax return done.
No, I finally got it to him.
Oh, you finally got it to him?
Yeah, sorry.
And that's okay. And that you did end up getting a refund but didn't pay any taxes in.
That's
to
correct.
The state.
That's correct.
Now, but you've got a CPA, is that correct?
Yes.
It does your tax work?
Yes.
Does he have you set up to make quarterly estimates?
He may have me set up. I just don't do them.
You don't pay any estimated tax?
No, I don't.
Well,
I know.
I wouldn't even keep a CPA if I were you then. I'd just kind of abandon the whole system because, you know, if you're using a CPA, they're supposed to guide you.
He guides
the right
me.
Thing.
I'm sorry. He guides me. I just am not very guidable. I'm sorry. I'm a product of Anita Hill feminism, and I just you know, I make federal but I just very rarely ever pay Kansas in advance any quarterly estimates, and I've never been penalized for it. It's just that sometimes I just don't follow the rules.
Oh, well, it's difficult for me to understand that you got a refund back if you didn't pay anything in. They don't do that.
It is difficult. Oh, they did. I'm sorry.
No, I don't think they do. I think that you're getting a refund back from excess payments that you've already made.
No, I'm sorry. It's not true. No.
Well, for somebody who doesn't follow the rules, and like you say you do, and from somebody who does follow the rules, like someone I am, I don't think that's correct.
I don't think it's correct either, but I'm telling you, I did not pay any Kansas income tax, and I'm getting an $1,100 refund. I'm a small. That's thanks to Governor Brownback.
You just want to make it sound that way, but I don't think that's the case.
Oh, Sharon, what kind of business do you own?
I'm a financial services person. I kind of understand numbers, and I know what my expenses are, and I assure you, that is the case. Oh, we have another call. Now you can...
Goodbye.
Okay. Oh, I tell you, being a woman, nobody ever thinks you know what you're talking about. Have you noticed that, women? I'm afraid we've probably run out of time, although I think there may be another caller. Are we going to take another call? No, we're not taking another call. Thank you. Thank you. Gail James and Becky Fast for being on today and talking to us about getting out the women's vote. And the men's vote, too, is very important, but particularly women, because we are definitely impacted.
Thank you very much.